You may have noticed that we are living in days of unfettered rage, days in which insult rules and decorum takes a back seat, days in which winning appears to many to require heading to the lowest common denominator in human interaction. I want you to use your imaginations for a moment, because I saw a cartoon that got to the iron of this in a recent New Yorker. One man is wandering along looking pretty happy, and he's wearing one of those t-shirts that says, "I love the USA, I love America, I heart," it's a little red heart, "I heart America." And coming the other way with a mouth downturned and clearly stomping as a person saying, "I heart, heart America, I love, love America, I love America more than you do." And we can catch the irony of this sort of angry response to the world we live in. Many of us live aware of a low but consistent level of anger these days, even when we're otherwise unaware of it affecting us. I was on one of those Stairmasters reading a new biography of Oscar Wilde, and it begins with a story of a libel case that was brought against Oscar Wilde's mother, really to get at his father, a distinguished doctor. And in the summing up of the case, it sort of came out of left field. It was just a complete creation of the attorney, and ultimately carried the day. It was probably libelous itself, and I found myself just getting incredibly angry without really aware of it until I looked down and saw the little number with my blood pressure going up like crazy. We get caught by these things without even knowing it. Many of you will have heard of, at some point, of Francis Fukuyama. He teaches at Stanford. 30 years ago now, he published an essay that was influential and controversial all at the same time called The End of History. And his most recent short book or long essay came out this year is called Identity, Contemporary Identity Politics and the Struggle for Recognition. And at the heart of the argument for him in this book is the idea of thymos, T-H-Y-M-O-S, thymos, which appears in Plato's Republic alongside but independent of desire and reason. Thymos is the third part of that makes up the human psyche. And thymos, Fukuyama tells us, is the seat of both anger and pride, especially anger at ourselves when we give in to our desires against our better judgment. Think of the addict who knows needs to stay clean and takes the hit anywhere, falls off the wagon. Thymos becomes the seat of judgments of our worth. Fukuyama writes, human beings do not just want things that are external to themselves, such as food, drink, Lamborghinis, or that next hit. They also crave positive judgments about their worth and or dignity. And he goes on, those judgments can come from within, but they're most often made by other people in society who recognize their worth. So if they receive that positive judgment, if we receive that positive judgment, they feel pride. And if they do not receive it, they feel anger when they think they're being undervalued, or shame when they realize they've not lived up to other people's standards. We feel anger when we think we are being undervalued, or shame when we realize we have not lived up to other people's standards. And so Fukuyama goes on in this essay, he looks at the gay marriage movement and the hashtag Me Too movement, among other things, recognizing that those issues were not primarily about desire or reason or even economics or a host of other things, but were driven by issues of dignity and worth. And so he goes on to see thymos as the seat of what we know as identity politics. So he distinguishes our need to be valued above others from our need to be given equal value to others. And he sees so much of the issues that have certainly affected culture wars, that have affected the church, but also our society, struggles over slavery and segregation, workers' rights, equality of women, and so on, expanding the circle of groups within society who are recognized legally often as having worth and dignity. But things become more complicated when that flops over into some groups, often in reaction to the inclusion of others. We see this in our current national life, demanding superiority, not just equal worth, but superior worth. And lo and behold, thymos, therefore, is found at the root of nationalism, national identity, our debates about immigration, some extremist groups, conversations about safe spaces on college campuses, victims' rights, and on and on and on. Thymos, dignity, worth, and how we experience that is often at the root of these debates. He ends his essay with what for me was a slightly disappointing chapter called What is to be Done? And he sees liberal democracy, as he did 30 years ago, as the only way to navigate the realities of thymos in a world at peace. He sees the whole business of navigating various identities as ultimately desirable, but wants to avoid the social fragmentation into smaller and smaller groups of people who find their identity over and against others. He wants a larger narrative of what it means to have identity in society. He wants multiculturalism subservient to a larger national identity expressed in citizenship laws. He wants attention given to the process by which immigrants are assimilated into this national culture, this larger narrative. He's not quite engaging the debate about the melting pot or the salad bowl argument, but he seems to be headed there in some ways. So it's an interesting book. But the issue underlying it, of thymos, of worth and desire, and how it gives rise to rage, is really important, it seems to me, because Jesus offers a slightly different answer, maybe a parallel answer. James and John, you recall, not obviously by desire or reason, but certainly by thymos, ask Jesus that they may be seated at the places of honor in glory. And naturally, when the other disciples heard about this, they were not thrilled. They began to be angry, we're told, with James and John. And suddenly, over-againstness, fueled by rage, is underway in the gospel story. So Jesus calls the 12 together in the midst of their righteous anger and gives them a larger purpose and a larger narrative of their identity while still leaving them distinctiveness, in this case, in contrast to the Gentiles. You know that among the Gentiles, those whom they recognize as their rulers lord it over them, and their great ones are tyrants over them, but it is not so among you. But whoever wishes to become great among you must be your servant. And whoever wishes to be first among you must be slave of all. For the Son of Man, title I understand to be the ultimate expression of what it means to be human, the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life a ransom for many. So whenever we become aware that we're stomping around with the equivalent of two hearts on our I Love America t-shirts, or we find our bile rising at the latest affront to all that we hold dear from our president or from some other Gentile tyrant who wants to lord it over us, or seeing someone throw trash on the street or tell lies to our detriment, even in a novel, whenever we know that our thymos is acting up or in revolt at our being mistreated, disrespected, put down, or anything else that causes bile to rise, Jesus says the answer is service. The answer is service. Now, he's not talking about servitude. He's not talking about slavery. He's not talking about coerced service. He's talking about chosen acts of service. This is the service that we identify here as a core spiritual practice of community. Last week, reminded us that the conscious spiritual practice around generosity takes both sustained and sustaining giving. Pledge letters in the mail this week. Many thanks to those of you who've been online and already. And also that more momentary giving that is something we do in the moment that is an antidote to our own anxiety. Well, the same is true for service. We might have made a casserole for so others might eat for some each month as a sustained commitment to serve others. Many thanks to those of you who've served in this ministry so faithfully. But there is also that momentary possibility of doing something for somebody else that turns the prism of our own anger. Choosing to do something for someone else, looking for an opportunity to do something for someone else, not because we're paid to do it or even forced to do it, but performing a service, however small it can seem, as a way of remembering what really matters, remembering who we are, remembering ourselves beyond and through the anger with which we live when we feel our dignity or our worth is being diminished or abused. Finding a way to serve when we recognize ourselves angry, furious, railing against the injustice of life even. It'll often take us back to that place where we remember that we are of worth, that we are of infinite worth. Whatever slings and arrows of the devil come our way, we are of infinite worth because we are made by love and we are made for love. We're not made for rage, although it's a clue, a reminder, a call to turn back toward what really matters and remember that we are of infinite worth because we are made by love for love. And here's the inconvenient thing that goes along with that. And so, of course, that is also true of the one who gives us offense. An act of service is an antidote to rage. A chosen act of service is an antidote to rage. It reminds us that we are of infinite worth, made by love for love. So in our customary time of silence for prayer, as always, use it how you will, maybe asking yourself whether you're aware of being angry some of the time, or even much of the time in these anger-fueled days, and perhaps decide that it's time for a conscious, chosen act of service for someone else. Whoever wishes to become great among you must be your servant. For the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve. In silence and in response to the gospel, let us pray.